Welcome to the Kavod Family Podcast. This is Casey Wilson. We've got Danny Antoine, Justin Bonner, and Travis Shook. Good morning, gents.
Morning.
How are you guys?
Good. How are you?
Doing well.
Good. Y'all have a good weekend?
Yeah.
It's a good weekend.
Well, we are. We just wrapped up a four-part series on four pillars that we stand on that kind of helped guide, shape, it helps us understand where we're at in life and where we need to go forward. It roots us in identity, where we get our calling, who gives us our calling, what we're actually called to do. Forging kind of that sanctifying process where we burn off the dross and we learn to actually walk in his character. And then reigning, that's when we actually impart this to another generation, when you pass the baton on, when it's not just about me being a black belt, but it's about that next generation of black belts, right? It's really fatherhood at its best.
I thought you was pointing at me. I thought you was going to say, it's not about me being a black man. Hey, man.
Dude, you wouldn't go there. So we're going to jump into the book of Daniel. If you're not familiar with the book of Daniel, Daniel is an Old Testament minor prophet. It's a book in the Old Testament that comes during the time of captivity. If you're familiar with that, go back and read. It's part of a 4,000-year period of history in the Old Testament where basically you see this cycle just over and over and over about how God begins a relationship with the people. Life gets good. They rebel. Life goes bad. God has to step in and redeem, and that cycle goes on and on and on. It just repeats, right? Mm-hmm. And it gets to the point, 1st, 2nd Kings, 1st, 2nd Chronicles, Jeremiah is prophesying. He's warning them, the king after king after king for Judah, for Israel, for God's people is just, they're bad. They're not good kings.
Dumpster juice.
You know, I can't remember what it is off the top of my head, but I think you can go back and look, and there's like two, maybe three that were good.
Josiah.
Josiah. He's a G. And he was actually the father of of Jehoiakim.
He started reigning when he was 8.
Did he really?
Yeah, baller.
So not many, right? Not many actually tore down the idols, false gods, false religions, false views.
You read 1st and 2nd Kings.
Yeah, it's just a great, great story. It's a narrative. It's history. It's his story. You got to read it. And so it enters into this 70-year captivity, and Daniel is in the middle of that, okay? He's prophesying in the middle of that. And so we're going to jump into the book. We're going to look at his identity. We're going to look at the calling that he had. We're going to look at what God was doing in his life to give him strength and courage to be a walking character. And then ultimately, how he imparts a lot of that to the generations around him. I mean, the dude's living in a foreign land with foreign kings. Everything's, it's as bad gets, right?
Yeah, I don't think it's really easy to overlook that when you're reading. You're like, yeah, okay, they were conquered and he went as a slave under a king and was told what to eat, how to eat, like all these things. And if you were to put that in our day now, going to relate this to our story, that like someone conquering us, taking us away, we're living there, changing our name, like just everything. Talk about.
Yeah, if you go back to this, the dude was a noble. We don't know a lot of his history, but he comes from a noble line, right? So you can imagine what was going on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's trained in those ways. He's wise. He's prudent. Wealth and riches, right? And then it says that he becomes a eunuch, right? That he's basically like moved to a foreign land, placed under a foreign ruler, taking his manhood from him, right? Mm-hmm. He has to live amongst foreign people, right? His name gets changed, food culture, everything about this dude gets changed. And he's still like face like flint, walks after God. Mm-hmm. That's the beauty, right? Mm-hmm. And so we want to learn from what Daniel does. Any more kind of touch points on who this guy is before we dive in?
No, I think we hit it. Like just the idea of where he was, no, like royalty or just well known and renowned in Israel, right? And it says that Nebuchadnezzar wanted him youth without blemish, good in appearance, skillful in wisdom, endowed with knowledge, understanding, and learning. Like he wanted someone of value, right? So he had that. They were conquered, completely taken out of that and submitted to this, and it's all for this pagan god and king for his glory.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's huge.
Well, not everyone was taken.
No.
Right? Not everyone was taken to Babylon. Like, that's how the Samaritans came into existence. You remember the Samaritans later on in the New Testament? That's how they came into existence, because the weak and the poor and the useless were left. And so they were left without a temple system. They were left without the roots of their religion. And so what they did was they attached paganism to Judaism, and it became this unclean form of Judaism. And that's why they're so looked down upon, is because those were the poor and destitute who were left during the time of the exile. So you see that even in that, Daniel was in a smaller number of a small nation taken out into another nation. Yeah. And you just see the hand of God in bringing him there in this time, raising him up, all of this whole big picture where you see, even in the midst of this time that God had been prophesying about for years and years and years, saying it's going to happen, it's going to happen, it's going to happen, if you don't turn, and they don't, but yet God is still working in it to preserve that remnant and raise up godly men.
So, I mean, if you're listening, why continue with this? Why keep going? Just look at this. Daniel was a man who had to move to a foreign land, live under foreign kings, foreign influence. Everything about him was not his Christian culture or his Judaic culture that he was a part of, what he had been trained in, right? And so if you're like, I don't know, Danny, you had to move to a foreign land, start up a business.
I was just sitting here thinking about that.
Were you really?
Yeah.
I mean, this appeals to a lot of us who had to actually step out from maybe our parents weren't Christian, or maybe we grew up in a home that was filled with kind of all kinds of chaos or divorce or separation or hardship. Whatever it might be, the point is we had to step out and find our own identity. We had to walk with God, right?
What's cool about Daniel, though, is that he didn't, even though they tried to give him another identity, he didn't take it.
I know.
You know what I mean? And like, even when you read through it, it refers to the other three by their new name, but it keeps Daniel. So like, to me, that says like he did not take, even after they gave them the names, the very next verse says, but Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself. In other words, yes, they're saying I should do this, but that's not me. He had such a solid identity in the Father that it didn't matter what they wanted. And he had a better game plan because he had the Father.
So let's talk about like why Nebuchadnezzar wanted these guys there. Like, what was the whole point of bringing these nobility, royal family, wise? They look good, they're smart, and they took them for 3 years and essentially brainwashed them. But like, why? Like, why? What was the point? What was he trying to achieve with this? You know what I'm saying? Like, because it's cool to talk about what he stood for, but like, we know that, okay, he was taken out of his nation, everything he stood for and lived for and followed God. Like, now his hand is being forced to do the complete opposite. And he makes a choice, which is what we're going to get into. But like, what is Nebuchadnezzar's aim in this?
It's not hard. I mean, you look at any ruler, what's his need?
He wants to be worshipped.
He wants to be worshipped, and he needs solid people to do that, right? To run his kingdom, to run his palaces, to do that work. He needs wise people, noble people, people worthy that can stand in his courts. Like, he's not looking for just bums. He wants to be recognized amongst people of value in many ways.
Yeah, it's almost like he's trying to create men who will reign.
In his image.
Right, in his image.
Yeah.
Like, and he wants their identity to be found in the God that he worships, who is ultimately himself, right? But he's trying to reorient their identity paganism, right?
This cheat sheet I got right here, it says he sought to assimilate the exiles into Babylonian culture, absolutely destroying the religious and cultural identity and creating dependence upon the royal court of Babylon, the pagan. So, I mean, if you look at it, that's exactly what's going on right now. Like, our dependency on money, on the government, on all these things, and like, well, take God out of school. Well, take it here. Take this out. Take this out. And as we get further into this, you start to see, like, the complete aim is to remove God and worship this king. And when this king dies, it's going to be another. It's going to be anything except for God, except for Jesus.
Yeah.
So the idea is that Daniel was pulled out of that, and for 3 years, trying to brainwash them. At the bottom of my cheat sheet, it says, they were schooled in the language and mythology literature of the Babylonians. Their food was assigned for them at the king's table, and it was constantly reminding them of their source of their daily bread. Was from this pagan, false god and everything.
Just so we can recognize it, what is that? Is that the ESV Study Bible?
Yes.
If you do not have that Bible on your shelf at home, that is a great one to grab. You can pick it up. I mean, you can get that one hardback for like $20 nowadays for sale. It's just too good to have on your shelf. But go back to Daniel. So let's just look real quick at these name changes, and you'll kind of pick up on it, right? Daniel's name means God is my judge, right? Nebuchadnezzar changes it to Belshazzar. Baal or Baal will protect. Like, so you will go from God is my judge to Baal, this false god, will protect you. I mean, think about what they're trying to change. When you give a person a name, you're trying to get them to understand something different, mm-hmm. right? You want them to buy in, to believe, to follow after, to trust in this.
Yeah, this one has, O lady wife of the god of Baal. Like, talk about, like, mm-hmm.
that's even further
opposite.
That mm-hmm. Baal would be your husband, right?
Old lady
that he
wife.
Would, yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Man.
You go to Hananiah, right, whose name changes to Shadrach. Yah, or God, has been gracious, and his name gets changed, and it means inspired of Aku, which is a pagan god, right? Mm-hmm. And so just continuing to connect these guys to their mm-hmm. pagan religion, taking them away from God, away from the God of the Hebrews, and placing them under the idols or under the gods that they serve.
And here, it's really cool because it shows both of those. It shows, like, they're honoring that false god like you're talking about, but it also associates a negative connotation to Yahweh. Like, it says here of Shadrach, I am very fearful of God. And then it says to command under Aku, the moon god. So it's like praising this false god while I'm scared of the mm-hmm. god that I used to love.
Man,
it's antagonist and pro-other the whole way through it.
So, and this is important because, I mean, back then in this day, the idea that we were living underneath these worldviews that served gods or false gods, that was not rare. That was normal. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was very normal. The kind of whole idea that there's this agnostic or atheistic world that we all live under where God isn't, just does not exist. That is not historical.
That's new.
Historical belief mm-hmm. is that gods ruled the lands, right? And you served your gods. That's what it was. Okay, that was your belief system. That
that's
was
why it
everything.
Says the one true living God, right? That's the whole point of saying that, is that it's shutting out all these other supposed gods and saying we worship the one true living God.
In our core, mm-hmm. I mean, the reason we're called Christians, right? Mm-hmm. We're Christians, little Christ, followers of Christ. Mm-hmm. Our identity is in Him. That's what it is, right? And so here you have these guys, their names get changed. Their culture gets changed, their location, who they are. They can't even have children. Like, everything about them gets changed, right? And so what is the point where we begin to see Daniel, where he's one, kind of submitting and being honorable and respectful to the culture that he's now placed under, but two, still following after God?
There's a line in the sand for sure.
Yeah.
What's cool is, though, is we keep hitting the emphasis of the name, identity, because if you were to think of, like, a man, what would bring him to his knees and just want him to conform and give up? Like, you literally remove his balls, his testicles, right? You change his name, and the name that was supposed to be honoring, like, back then, the name was everything. Your name mm-hmm. was a weighty thing. Like, the fact of you were son of such and such, and the name of your father had weight.
Yeah.
The meaning of your name for Yahweh had weight, and now that you've completely shifted it, you've left your land, your heritage, your riches, your money, your fame within your people, you're now a slave underneath a king. He chops off your testicles, you can't have kids, and your name is changed, and you're forced to submit and learn all these studies of false gods. Like, if anyone has a reason to weep and woe is me and just sulk in it, these dudes have it. Right?
Seriously.
Yeah, that's a...
But yeah. And then in it, like you said, they're not stupid. Like, they're not going to be outright defiant on anything, because they could literally be killed. Like, without a bat of an eye, the king could kill them. But they draw a line on the sand whenever you tell me not to follow God, when you tell me not to pray to Jesus, when you tell me to take my worth and my identity and things that are completely sold to Him, when you tell me to stop doing that, I'm not going to follow it. And that's what we see here. But everything else, they're like, all right, yeah, well, I mean, it is what it is. We'll go through the motions. We can't really do anything. But when it comes to the value and why they are alive and the reason for it all, they don't waver.
Mm. So how far-fetched is it? I mean, if for us, you know, a lot of people in America have grown up underneath the privileges, I would say, under of the banner of Christianity. some of the fruits of its belief system, some of the fruits of its standards, whether it be marriage or family or children. Like we've kind of grown up underneath those blessings. Mm-hmm. Now the laws might have been changed at times, or things are changing culturally and swaying, and you kind of go through these ebbs and flows, you know, as courts swing. But by and large, America has had this banner of Christian belief that's hung over it in many ways. Our early schools, our early governments, why they were formed, how they were formed, their systems, their structures, all of that kind of has a root in Christianity, right? But we kind of, that kind of lulls you. It kind of lulls you to a comfort in some ways. Wouldn't you agree?
Mm-hmm. Comfort zone is one of the biggest dream killers I've ever seen in my life, man. We've gotten to be very comfortable. When you do get to be very comfortable, you stop delving in. I mean, we just talked about it a little while ago. We live in a culture where everything is me-centered, right? Everything is me, me, me. Self-focus, you know, everything is about self. So we take that now, we bring it into the Word of God, and we take the Word of God and try to make the Word of God, like, do the same thing, you know? And it's not. That's not the way it was designed. You know, we've become the self-definers of what's right and wrong. We left that moral compass. We took away God. And basically what we said when we did that was we're basically saying, I don't want God to be God anymore. I want to be God, right? I want to be the self-referencing point for what's right and wrong. So which means I don't need God to tell me that anymore, right? Now, tell me you don't see that throughout the entire culture, and especially even with kids, because we teach kids to do the same thing. Now, the funny part about that to me is we teach kids to not obey authority, but we get mad at them when they don't. Think about that. We've taught kids today to not obey authority. But then when they do the very thing that they're being taught, we turn around and get mad at them.
Expand on that. What do you mean that we teach them to not obey authority?
Back in the day when I was growing up,
Yeah. Okay,
adults were adults.
Okay.
All right? You understood that an adult was an adult, a child was a child. You never put a child on the same level as an adult. Nor did any adult speak to children as though they were children.
Gotcha.
Right? There was a line drawn in the sand, and kids respected adults. Now, get this. All the issues that we see today with kids, we didn't have back then. It wasn't the same. Kids respected adults, and everywhere they went, kids behaved differently than they do today.
Yeah.
Right? Now it's not like that. Think about how adults speak to kids now. Everything you ask, it's like it's a request. Back in the day, adult will tell you, go put your shoes on. Now it's asking them, Johnny, will you please go put your shoes on for me? Right? Think about that. No, and like people come to the karate school and they're like, you know, why these kids listen to you? And I'm like, because I don't argue with 4-year-olds.
Right.
You know what I mean? I'm not asking you. I'm telling you what to do. We make the decisions for you. If a child could make a decision on their own, why in the world do they need the adults in their lives? I'm going to give little Johnny choices, right? I heard a teacher say to me one time, you know, we don't say no to children. I said, okay. So if little Johnny's going to go put his finger in that outlet over there, you're not going to say, no, don't do that? No, that's negative. And I give him, I said, so what do you do? He said, we give him choices. I said, what do you mean you give him choices? Right? Well, I'll give him a toy instead. I said, but you didn't tell him not to put his finger in that socket. No, because that's negative. I said, okay, well, little Johnny's a boy. Let me break this down how this is going to happen, right? You're going to give little Johnny that toy. As soon as you turn your back, little Johnny's going to look at that outlet like, right? Then he's going to go stick his finger in there. And when little Johnny dies, he would have died. Why? Because you didn't have it in you to be an adult in his life and say no, because that's bad for you. No is not a negative thing. These kids don't hear that enough. That's why when they don't have, and think about this, when kids don't have boundaries, they don't feel safe. And when they don't feel safe, they react very negatively.
So you're saying
we've taken that and we applied what we're doing in the culture. It's like we're taking that into the Word of God.
Yeah.
Like we want the Word of God to serve us. You know, I heard a preacher say, you know, we want to read a gospel that serves us instead of a gospel that transforms us. That's where we're at right now. So even the gospel of Jesus Christ here, we only read it in the context that it serves me and my needs, not me conforming to the way that he wanted me to be.
Same with parents, right? We want them to serve us in many ways, or authorities or coaches or people around us. Do they serve me?
Right.
Versus do they transform
me? Well, I think one of the with going back to how that this conversation started, I think that when you're talking about being lulled to sleep and society, culture, all of that changing, is that we got to the point where all the way from the laws all the way to morality in general is based on Christianity. I mean, let's just be honest. Many people disagree. But because American morality is based upon Christian truth.
Moral compass.
There's really no way to argue that, truthfully. The distinctly Christian morality that was put into law was derived from Christian principles.
Yeah.
Right? That's just truth. Yeah. Right? It, if you don't like it, that's on you, but it's truth, right?
And by and large, it's where we argue to go back to that place.
But that's exterior.
Yeah.
And what happens is when it's exterior, you don't take ownership of it in your own life, right? You don't have to take ownership of it because the society is doing that for you.
I got you.
Right? And so what happens is when society goes sideways and they're no longer embracing it for you, then what do? Well, everybody throws up their hands and says, well, I don't even know who I am. I don't know what to do. But what do you see Daniel? When his comfort, right, when God and the nation imposing right relationship with God upon him is taken away, what does he do? When his identity is taken away, when his masculinity is taken away, when his name is taken away, when his everything is taken away, what does it say in verse 8? But Daniel resolved that he would not defile himself with the king's food, right? What does it say? In other translation, it says, but Daniel resolved in his heart. And that's what we're lacking. That's exactly what we're talking about, is that when the culture outside flip-flops or goes apostate on us and turns and is actually fighting against us now and not fighting with us or for us, then what happens is we turn with it. But Daniel doesn't turn with his circumstances, right? He says, no, okay, they can change my name. You can call me Belteshazzar, and I might even answer to it. But in my heart, what God sees, that's where the line in the sand was drawn.
Absolutely.
Right? He couldn't say, no, don't emasculate me. They would have said, okay, I'm going to do it anyways, right? Like he couldn't say, I'm not going to take that name. Because like you said, they would just kill him or something. But he said, in my heart, I am not going to cross that threshold, because you cannot take away the resolution of my heart. Yeah. And that's what we're lacking, is that when you see the outside world flips on you, if you don't have it in your heart, if you're not purposing in your heart to stay true to God, then you're going to flip with society. And I mean, I think that's exactly what's happening.
We're talking about. Yeah. Our stakes are not what his stakes were. I mean, certain Christians around the world, believers, it definitely is. But it says, but Daniel resolved that he would not defile himself with the king's food. That could easily have been penalty with death, without a shadow of a doubt. You approach the king. I remember, I think it was in Nehemiah, if you were to come before the king with a sorrowful face, he could just end it right there. Why are you bringing that to me? Because he's here and you're here.
Yeah.
And he was I'm drawing the line here. In the very next verse, it says, and God gave Daniel favor and compassion in the sight of the chief of the eunuchs.
Isn't that good? God will respond. Mm-hmm. You honor God, God will respond. That to me is one of the most important verses in this whole chapter, is when it says, but Daniel purposed in his heart. That means he made a decision. God is first. That's who I'm going with. And God now responds. And heaven will always respond to the voice of this people if you will put God first. Once he did that, the very next verse, like you just said, as God said, what did God do? God had brought Daniel into favor. God brought him into favor and goodwill of the chief of the eunuchs, which means what? The leadership there.
That's pretty good.
That's his covering.
That's not just that Daniel grew in wisdom. That's actually that God expanded.
But it's
right.
It's his
favor.
It's both, because check it out. Further at the end of chapter 1, it says, the king requested all of the wise people to come in, right? And it says, therefore, they stood before the king, and in every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king inquired of them, he found them as in Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, was 10 times better than all the magicians and all the enchanters that were in the kingdom.
Isn't that pretty good?
Mm-hmm. Which is really cool, because Proverbs 22:29, it says, do you see a man skillful in his work? He will stand before kings, and he will not stand before obscure men.
So pause real quick, because let's look at this. The king, the foreign king, looks at him and says, look, I want noble men. I want them to be wise, knowledgeable. I want them to be handsome, good-looking, to be able to, capable to stand in my courts. He's looking at all the externals. Daniel resolves in his heart to follow after God, right? God grants favor and blessing upon Daniel's life.
While that's happening, they're being brainwashed for 3 years. Mm-hmm. Chopped off manhood, changed their name, give them food that they didn't agree. Like, brainwashed while that's happening.
So, come on, this is too good. If we are just so focused externally on how do I grow in discipline, how do I grow in talent, how do I grow in money, how do I grow in my business, we're missing what Daniel needed most in this moment. Right, we're missing the favor of God coming into his life, and actually, because he set his heart apart to him,
but what's cool is he committed to the Father. He wasn't looking for the favor, though. His prize was God. That's the thing. Like, all of the other stuff is irrelevant. God was the prize.
But because God was his prize, he wanted to make God the priority. We are so scared of sacrifice nowadays; it's not even funny. That he made a decision in his heart. It's God and nothing else, period. But he's making that decision knowing the consequences. We don't like to make decisions if there's consequences involved. So therefore, for us to expect the same outcome as the men and women that we read about in the Bible without going through that, I think that's crazy. That's just really stupid.
So that's the level of identity that we're talking about. Daniel, though you took everything externally from him, his true identity, the name Daniel. You even changed his name. God is my judge. That never was left. That never went away. Mm-hmm. You could not take that from him.
Because that was his identity.
But I think one of the things that in this hopefully will strike at men and women who are listening to this is when you see Daniel, but Daniel resolved that he would not defile himself with the king's food, resolved in his heart. Then it says, and God gave Daniel favor and compassion. What that means is that when Daniel resolved it in his heart, that language means that he really meant it. And how many times do you say, well, I mean, I resolved in my heart to love my wife better. But you resolved in your heart, and in the very, 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 very back of your heart was the subtle recognition that you weren't going to. You resolved in your heart that you were not going to look at pornography again and defile yourself by looking at pornography. But in the back of your heart, in the back of your mind, there was the subtle recognition, I'm probably going to do it again. Right? I mean, how many times has that happened?
Why do you think that?
But we do that because we're not really resolved.